Iran says its decision to increase uranium enrichment to 60% is in response to recent act of sabotage at the Natanz nuclear facility. An intelligence center affiliated with the Israeli Mossad spy agency reportedly comes under attack in northern Iraq. Hello everyone, thank you for tuning in to World News. Our top story, Iran says its decision to enrich uranium to 60% purity is in response to Sunday's act of sabotage against the country's Natanz nuclear facility. Iran's ambassador to the IAEA says the enrichment at this level will be implemented in two cascades of the new IR-4 and IR-6 centrifuges at the Natanz site. Qasem Gharibabadi added that Iran has begun the technical process of enriched uranium with a 60% purity will be produced next week. Tehran has notified the IAEA of its decision, which has been confirmed by the agency.
Iranian Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi announces Iran's decision to increase the level of uranium enrichment from 20 to 60% and to install an additional 1,000 centrifuges at its Natanz facility, the target of a recent act of sabotage. Araghchi broke the news upon arriving in Vienna for another joint commission meeting aimed at reviving the nuclear deal. He said the International Atomic Energy Agency has been informed.
We just sent a new letter to the agency saying that we would start from tomorrow enrichment up to 60%, and that is for Iran needs in to produce certain radio isotopes needed for certain medical treatments.
Araghchi said the damaged centrifuges in Natanz would be replaced by more advanced ones, and that things would go back to normal there in the coming weeks. Signatories of the nuclear deal are expected to meet in Vienna on Thursday as negotiations continue. Iran insists that all U.S. sanctions should be lifted and their removal verified before it goes back to full compliance.
We believe that this round of negotiations is the time for the U.S. to present the list. And I hope that I can go back to Tehran with the list of sanctions which should be lifted. Otherwise, I don't believe we can continue like this. Otherwise, it would be a waste of time, actually. So let's see.
Informal discussions have already begun here with the hope of reaching an agreement on the list of U.S. sanctions that need to be lifted, after which Iran says it will discuss the verification process. Vienna.
The U.S. says it remains committed to nuclear negotiations with Iran in light of Tehran announcing its decision to enrich uranium to 60% purity. President Joe Biden's press secretary, Jen Psaki, said the administration believes a diplomatic approach is the only path forward and that having a discussion, even indirect, is the best way to come to a resolution. Meanwhile, France said it's readying a response to Iran's announcement. The French presidency added that the Iranian move is a serious development which needed to be coordinated at least with the remaining parties to the 2015 nuclear deal. Author and journalist Robert Fantina says Iran's decision to further scale back JCPOA commitments has legal merit.
Yes, this is Iran is being completely reasonable. It is the Iranian government is doing what it needs to do for its people to protect them, provide them with nuclear energy that's required. The other signatories have violated the agreement, first the United States, and then the European signatories following along with the U.S. It's very clear, and the Iranian government, Iranian spokespeople have said from the start, that if the United States removes all sanctions and re-enters the JCPOA in full compliance, then Iran will comply also. The U.S. is demanding that Iran go first and comply fully, but the Iranian government has no reason to believe what the U.S. says and to accept the U.S.'s commitments. So the Iranian government, in increasing the enrichment rate and in demanding that U.S. remove sanctions first, is completely reasonable and completely within the law.
Iran has summoned the ambassador to Portugal, a current holder of the European Union's rotating presidency, to protest the bloc's latest batch of anti-Tehran sanctions. Iran's foreign ministry slammed the sanctions as politically motivated, noting Tehran is considering counter-sanctions against the bloc. Now, Iran has already said it will suspend comprehensive negotiations with the EU, which includes talks on human rights and all cooperation based on the talks. This includes cooperation regarding refugees and fighting terrorism and on to drug trafficking. On Monday, the EU added 8 Iranian officials and 3 entities to its sanctions blacklist over alleged violations of human rights. Iran has repeatedly rejected the accusation and criticized Europe for its double standards on the issue of human rights. Iraqi media reports say a facility affiliated with Israel's Mossad spy agency has been attacked in the north of the country. Security sources said a number of Israeli forces were killed in the attack. Incident comes hours after an Israeli ship was attacked in the UAE's port of Fujairah, causing damage but no casualties. The vessel, sailing under the Bahamas flag, belongs to Israeli Ray Shipping Company and was loaded with vehicles. Israeli media says the attack is likely carried out with either a missile or a drone. The Israeli daily The Jerusalem Post says incident comes 2 days after a sabotage attack on Iran's Natanz nuclear facility. It says Iran had vowed to avenge that act of sabotage. Israel's Channel 12 also quoted unnamed regime officials as blaming Iran for the ship attack. Earlier, we were joined by Paul Leroudier, former U.S. government advisor. Let's hear what he had to say about the incident at the Mossad-affiliated center in northern Iraq.
The Iranian government has more or less said it all, that they're going to retaliate, and they always do. Interestingly, they don't retaliate in a massive way. In fact, anytime Iran has been attacked in any way, or its ships on the sea or anything like that, they always retaliate. You have to expect it. And it's what any nation would do to defend itself. In Iran's case, they don't retaliate. They retaliate proportionally. They do it in such a way that it's not of interest for the other country to retaliate again.
U.S. President Joe Biden will reportedly withdraw all American troops from Afghanistan by the 11th of September this year. Now, the withdrawal is said to be based on certain security and human rights guarantees. The U.S. Secretary of State and the Defense Secretary are expected to brief NATO allies on the decision on Wednesday. The U.S. decision, should it be confirmed, will miss a May 1st deadline for withdrawal agreed with the Taliban militant group last year. The Taliban, on the other hand, say that they will not attend a summit on Afghanistan's future due to be held in Turkey later this month until all foreign forces leave the country. Since the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan in 2001, thousands of people, including women and children, have lost their lives in the country. Russia accuses the U.S. and other NATO countries of turning Ukraine into a powder keg by increasing arms supplies to Kiev. Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov said military support is a serious challenge to Russia's security. He said that Moscow will do everything possible to ensure its security. Meanwhile, NATO has called on Russia to withdraw its troops from Ukraine's eastern border, which the alliance claims is Moscow's biggest buildup since 2014. Russia says it moves its forces around as it sees fit, including for defensive purposes. And this comes as the U.S. is set to send 2 warships to the Black Sea this week. Moscow has called the deployment a provocation, warning Washington to ensure its warships stay well away from Crimea for their own good. U.S. President Joe Biden has pledged a push for a significant change for African Americans.
And not only, but we also have an awful lot of things we have to deal with, not when it only comes to police, when it comes to advancing equality, economic opportunity.
Biden said every agency of his administration is focusing on triggering a change for African Americans. The U.S. president added that black lawmakers helped bring about that change by contributing to the passing of his $1.9 trillion coronavirus stimulus package, which he said will reduce poverty among the black community. Biden also called for a thorough investigation into the shooting of Dante Wright by a police officer in the Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, which resulted in the black man's death. Several instances of police brutality against African Americans have sent shockwaves throughout the U.S., sparking nationwide anti-racism protests. Now, 6 years ago into the refugee and migrant crisis, numbers of people fleeing to Europe are dropping due to the pandemic. Still, a record 6,000 asylum seekers crossed the English Channel to the U.K. just last summer from the French port of Calais amid warnings from human rights groups about a right-wing backlash, Saipuraza reports.
Lining up for donated clothes and a warm meal, more than 100 men who have survived Western-backed wars in the Middle East and Africa and a death-defying journey to get to the UK. A former bank employee, Keenan, is a Syrian asylum seeker living in temporary accommodation in the Welsh city of Cardiff.
I didn't leave my country in the first 5 years of the war. I left after 8 years and a half. I tried and did my level best to stay in my home country and not being refugee. Refugee is not a good thing to be. It's not an option.
Before Cardiff, this father of one and his fellow asylum seekers had been housed in a dilapidated army barracks in the coastal village of Penally. Economics graduate Fateh worked as a risk analyst in his home country.
When I first came here, I had no idea about military camps, but we put into camps and it was a horrible experience.
The UK government says it takes the well-being of asylum seekers extremely seriously, and any abuse is completely unacceptable. But the organizer of the welcoming event in Cardiff, who has also spent a lifetime combating racism, believes the government has failed to live up to its obligation.
Without a shadow of a doubt, they failed. They failed miserably. Some of the initial accommodation is abysmal. We have seen people rehoused in shared houses where they have to share one bathroom, one kitchen with dangerous kitchen facilities.
After surviving the dangerous journey to Europe, they were greeted with this: far-right protests in Dover last year.
Here in Cardiff today, an act of kindness and compassion towards asylum seekers who come here from far and wide, from the Middle East and Africa, among them doctors and engineers. Contrast this with the kind of hostility and hate they have been receiving from some people who think that their country is under invasion by irregular immigrants.
One of the consequences of coronavirus has meant the country's already overloaded asylum application system has ground to a halt, leaving these men living a life of wait and see.
Many people have been living here in limbo, not knowing when their asylum process is going to be progressed. And of course, you have some people here who are separated from their family. They have family.
Britain remains the fifth most favorite European destination for refugees and asylum seekers, way behind Germany, France, Spain, and Greece. Keenan and other refugees and asylum seekers have survived war and the perilous voyage here, but their journey to call it their new home is yet to end. Saipuraza, London.
Yemen's Ministry of Transportation says that Emirati oil tankers arrived at Shaba in eastern Yemen to transport 11,000 tons of Yemeni crude. The ministry adds that another tanker from the UAE is also on its way from China to the Yemeni port of Daba to transport over 300,000 tons of oil. More in this report from Abdul Latif Al-Washali.
While millions of Yemenis are suffering from a severe fuel shortage due to Saudi Arabia's continued seizure of oil ships, an Emirati oil tanker named Saga has arrived at Bir Ali port in Shabwa in eastern Yemen to transport 115,000 tons of Yemeni crude oil to the UAE.
Oil smuggling carried out by the Saudi-led coalition in southern and eastern provinces has cost Yemen more than $7 billion over the past 2 years. Annually, more than 14 million barrels of crude oil are being smuggled illegally through several ports in Shabwa province, which is under the control of Saudi Arabia.
Meanwhile, Yemen's petroleum company says another oil tanker named Apollitaris is on its way to Deva port in Al Mukalla to move more than 300,000 tons of oil to an unknown destination.
Yemen is being systematically plundered by Saudi Arabia. An estimated $145 million of oil income is being looted monthly. Recently, an Emirati ship arrived at Shaba port to plunder a million barrels of crude oil, and there is another ship coming from China to transport over 2 million barrels of crude oil.
Yemenis have been suffering from a harsh shortage of fuel due to the continued detention of 10 patrol ships by Saudi Arabia. While the vessels are inspected and authorized by the UN through verification and inspection mechanism.
Yemenis say plundering their oil is an illegal act that reveals the real reasons for the years-long war on their country by Saudi Arabia and its allies. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Pakistan has been the scene of violent protests after the government apparently backed out of its commitment to expel the French ambassador. The repeated publications of blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad in France has been the main cause of anger in Pakistan. Javed Rana has more from Islamabad.
It was a pitch battle in garrison city of Rawalpindi near Pakistan's capital Islamabad. These were repeated scenes across Pakistan. The violent clashes erupted after what protesters blamed the government to have backed out of its agreement with them to expel the French ambassador to Pakistan over the repeated incidents of public display and republication of blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Many died and dozens of others injured from the both sides in the clashes after the protesters blocked the major railways and road links. Protesters claim that at least 10 of their companions were killed and over 100 were arrested by the police.
This government doesn't care about the dignity of our Prophet. Obviously, people take to the streets to show their anger. We gave the government 5 months to expel the French ambassador, but they did not expel him. We will continue our protests until our demand is met, which is the expulsion of French ambassador.
Pakistan has a history of similar violent protests over the frequent incidents of blasphemy of the Prophet under the guise of freedom of expression in the West. Protecting the honor of the Prophet is the most sensitive issue in Pakistan, which attracted millions of people on the roads in the past.
Sending the French ambassador back may be a kind of a step which again could provide an immediate relief as far as the domestic political scene is concerned. But that is not going to solve the problem. Today it is France, tomorrow it will be another country. And so we need to be having a comprehensive campaign.
Pakistan has been under pressure from Paris-based anti-money laundering outfit, the Financial Action Task Force, which placed Pakistan on grey list a few years ago on the charges of terror financing. Now Pakistan needs French support together with other countries to come out of the grey list, because of which Islamabad is reluctant to expel French ambassador. However, rising anti-French sentiments in Pakistan are leaving little option with the government but to expel French ambassador. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Thanks for tuning in and goodbye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Researchers are searching for possible links between blood clotting and the Oxford AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccine. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Heidi Ledford, researcher. This article is titled, How Could Oxford AstraZeneca Vaccine Cause Blood Clots? Scientists race to investigate. Stay tuned for more. The occurrence of a mysterious blood clotting disorder among some recipients of the Oxford AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine has researchers scrambling to uncover whether and how the inoculation could trigger such a reaction. After weeks of investigation, the European Medicines Agency, EMA, announced on April 7th that there is a possible link between the clots and the vaccine. The finding leaves researchers wrestling with a medical mystery. Why would a vaccine trigger such an unusual condition? Of course, there are hypotheses. Maybe it's something with the vector. Maybe it's an additive in the vaccine. Maybe it's something in the production process. I don't know, says Sabine Eichinger, a hematologist at the Medical University of Vienna. It could be any of these things. He was among the first to notice the clotting disorder, a strange combination of blood clots, which can be dangerous and potentially fatal if they block blood flow to the brain or lungs, and a counterintuitive deficiency of cell fragments called platelets that promote clotting. The clots also appeared in unusual parts of the body, such as the brain and abdomen, rather than in the legs, where most deep vein blood clots form. This alarm bells for doctors who had previously encountered a similar phenomena in a few people who had been treated with the blood-thinning drug heparin. Heparin is normally used to prevent clotting, but in very rare cases can trigger a syndrome called HIT, which causes blood clots together with low platelet levels. By March 22nd, the EMA had assembled 86 reports of people who had experienced blood clots in the brain or abdomen within 2 weeks of receiving a dose of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine developed in Britain by AstraZeneca in Cambridge and the University of Oxford. Some of these cases have been confirmed to bear the hallmarks of HIT, even though these people had not received heparin. The EMA is asking AstraZeneca to conduct a number of investigations, including lab studies, to determine the effect of the vaccine on blood clotting and evaluations of data from clinical trials to try to glean any further information about risk factors. Although there are reports that the syndrome is seen more often in women than in men, particularly those aged under 60, the EMA was unable to conclude that women are at higher risk. Many countries prioritize healthcare workers to receive the inoculations, and women comprise a larger segment of this workforce. The EMA is also supporting studies by two academic consortia centered in the Netherlands, one led by Erasmus University Medical Center in Rotterdam, and the other by investigators at Utrecht University and the University Medical Center, Utrecht. Their project list is ambitious. The consortium, co-chaired by virologist Eric C. M. Van Gorp at Erasmus, consists of 22 hospitals that have been working together to study the effects of coronavirus on blood coagulation. The team will look for potential cases of HIT among cases of blood clots following vaccination with the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine and other COVID-19 vaccines. It will also conduct lab studies to look for signs that the already small risk could be cut even further by reducing the amount of vaccine administered in each dose. The EMA expects to obtain some results from the projects within the next 2 months, said Peter Arlett, head of the agency's Data Analytics and Methods Task Force. The team will also try to tease apart whether this problem is restricted to certain populations. What we find in Western Europe will not automatically be true in South America or other populations, says Van Gorp. This is a worldwide problem. Everyone is concerned. And critically, Van Gorp and his colleagues will try to further evaluate whether the probable association between the vaccine and the syndrome is real. It is notoriously difficult to confirm whether a suspected effect of a vaccine is truly linked to the vaccine, partially when it is a vaccine that has been used in tens of millions of people. Somebody who gets the vaccine could have a stroke or a heart attack a week later because they were already going to have a stroke or a heart attack, says cardiologist Manoj Bikdeli at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts. Bikdeli would also like to see researchers collect and share more data about the incidence of this clotting condition in unvaccinated populations. Heightened awareness around the possible link between vaccination and the syndrome could lead to increased reporting rates among those who are vaccinated compared with those who are not, which could falsely inflate the perceived rate at which the syndrome occurs, he says, and such concerns could spread to other coronavirus vaccines. Other researchers are keen to pick apart what triggers the syndrome. HIT is thought to be the result of an immune reaction to complexes formed when negatively charged heparin molecules bind to a positively charged protein called platelet factor 4, which is important for clotting. The result is activation of platelets kicking off a chain reaction. Once you get the platelets activated, it's like putting a match to tinder, says John Kelton, a hematologist at McMaster University in Hamilton, Canada, who has been studying HIT for 40 years.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah,
who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum and welcome to yet another edition from series of Q&A in Islamic Beliefs from IRIB English Radio. In these series of shows, we are trying to ask and answer some doubts and misconceptions, which is usually being asked by different questioners and theological and Islamic issues. So for this series of shows, we have been inviting scholars and researchers from Qom Seminary Schools. Like always, we have Sheikh Murtada Karimi in the studio with us, and we shall start our questions with him. But before starting the discussion, I'd like to welcome Sheikh and say salam to Sheikh Murtada.
Wa alaikum salam, and thank you for having me.
Thanks for accepting the invitation, Sheikhuna. The question of the day that we want to ask it from the respected guest speaker of the show, Sheikh Murtada Karimi, is concerning the fasting in the holy month of Ramadan. There are some doubts or misconceptions with regard to the fasting and issues related to fasting that we needed to, and that we found it necessary to ask this question here in this show, though the question has come to us from a questioner. But it has been asked, Sheikh, that fasting in the holy month of Ramadan for 30 consecutive days actually reduces the immunity of the body and actually weakens the strength of the body, and actually it makes it apt to receive different kinds of, let's say, sicknesses or diseases. Is it true that fasting in the holy month of Ramadan reduces the power of a person and also the immunity system, so that it makes it actually ready for receiving any kind of disease? Is it what the science today say so? In case it is actually accepted, in case it is accepted, is there any solution for that? While also we have heard that even recently with the issues regarding the pandemic of the COVID-19, that all the world actually has been afflicted with, this idea can be strengthened, and actually this question can come to the board and to be asked more by different questioners. So what is a scientific or Islamic answer to this question?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Especially in the recent years, in which in many countries people have been fasting for many hours during the day, I can say that unfortunately this notion has been preached by some people that Islam is against the health of the people, because fasting for 30 consecutive days in hot days and for more than 16 and 17 hours, it is for sure harmful to the body, and in that Islam is against the health of the people. Now, the answer is that one phrase of the Quran consists of three words, has answered all the doubts 14 centuries ago. Islam is not against science.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever fasting is harmful to the health of a person, and of course the person is sure about that and it is a considerable harm,
mm-hmm.
Islam says that not only you are not allowed to fast, but rather if you fast, it is an act of disobedience of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It is haram, it is forbidden. If you are sure that fasting is against your health, if you are sick, and the specialists tell you that you do not, you shouldn't fast, then even if you fast, not only it is not accepted, rather it is an act of disobedience to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You are doing something haram. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in chapter Baqarah, after referring to the fact that fasting is an obligation, Allah says, "A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim." The month of Ramadan is the one in which the Holy Quran was sent down as a guidance for mankind with manifest proofs of guidance and the criterion. فَمَنْ شَهِدَ مِنْكُمُ الشَّهْرَ فَلْيَصُمْهُ. So let those of you who witness it fast in it. وَمَنْ كَانَ مَرِيضًا أَوْ عَلَى سَفَرٍ فَعِدَّةٌ مِّنْ أَيَّامٍ أُخَرٍ. And as for someone who is sick or on a journey, let it be a similar number of other days. يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ بِكُمُ الْيُسْرِ وَلَاكْ يُرِيدُ بِكُمُ الْعُسْرِ. Allah desires ease for you, and He does not desire hardship for you. Now, it is very strange that these people who are anti-Islam, they claim that Islam is against health and hygiene, but we see that here Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala himself says that I do not desire hardship for the people, I desire ease. Yuridullahu bikumul yusr. Of course, we do not we are not going to claim that because fasting is somehow difficult for most of the people, they shouldn't fast. No, this is not the case. At the end of the day, fasting is to some extent difficult. But is it harmful to the body? Islam says that if the answer is positive, you shouldn't fast. Man kana maridan, only three words. So answering all doubts which are raised today regarding the immunity system and the pandemic and the fact that, and the claim that fasting weakens the immunity system, Islam says that if you're sure about that, that fasting is harmful to your body and it is a considerable harm, then you shouldn't fast. But we have no, I mean, dispute here. I mean, sometimes you see that some people try to say that no, fasting is good for the health. Some people say that no, it's harmful. Islam says that if you are sure that it is harmful, you shouldn't fast. Period. I mean, there is no dispute over that.
Mm-hmm.
So you know about your conditions of your body. You know about your illnesses and so on and so forth. If you are sure, then you follow what you are sure about. If not, you refer to an expert in that in that regard and follow
mm-hmm.
his or her instruction. It's not, I mean, a big deal.
Yeah.
Now, I just searched about the relation between fasting and immunity system, and I came across different researchers done mainly by non-Muslims, which tell us that this claim at least is not absolutely true. The claim that that fasting weakens the immunity system. Let me read the conclusion of some researchers in this regard. According to one research, which is published in a website called ScienceDirect.com, it says, in summary, our results suggest that 30 days intermittent fasting from dawn to sunset can be a preventive and therapeutic approach in cancer, as well as in several metabolic, inflammatory, and immune diseases, Alzheimer's disease, and neuropsychiatric disorders, by resulting in a proteome protective against obesity, diabetes, inflammation, and mental health. Another research reads, in the year 2014, a study, Walter Longo and his colleagues at USC found that fasting lowered white blood cell counts, which in turn triggered the immune system to start producing new white blood cells. White blood cells are a key component of your body's immune system. Once you start eating again, according to Longo, your stem cells kick back into high gear to replenish the cells that were recycled. The idea behind this strategy is that you have to fast for several days to get the benefits. Basically, you have to fully deplete your energy reserves, and it takes your body at least 24 hours and probably 48 hours or more to do this. And just one another research says fasting during, now we come to the concept of fasting and COVID-19. It was raised in the last year that some people believe that fasting is against the immunity system, and it makes more likely for people to be afflicted by COVID-19 if they fast. Again, I repeat, the clear-cut answer is that if you are sure about that and you know that it will bring a great harm to your body, then you shouldn't fast. This is very clear.
Can anyone actually reach to this conclusion to do personal ijtihad or personal, let's say, ijtihad?
Deduction.
Personal deduction that, okay, it looks harmful, and then he leaves fasting. Is it enough?
Let me read the result of a research about the relation between fasting and COVID-19, and then I will come to your question. Again, this is the result of one research. Maybe some other scholars, they are going to, reject that. But according to this study, it says that fasting during the COVID-19 pandemic is a challenge for Muslims. However, UGM nutritionist Dr. Bodininksari said that fasting is beneficial to the immune system or immunity. She says several studies say fasting can increase immunity. Vice versa, there have been no studies that state fasting increases the risk of COVID-19 infection. The head of the Health Nutrition Study Program of the Faculty of Medicine, Public Health and Nursing said that fasting could repair damaged cell tissues.
Yeah.
By fasting for 30 days, it can stimulate the production of new white blood cells. It underlies the regeneration of the entire immune system, and it continues. And also she explained that the quality and quantity of the nutritional intake immensely influence the body's immunity. People who experience malnutrition will be very vulnerable to COVID-19 infection. Not only does it enhance immunity, but fasting also helps detoxify the body. Fasting can help remove various poisons that are stored in the body. For example, addictive substances in foods such as preservatives and food coloring. Fasting can also reduce body fat mass. Excess fat in the body can damage the balance of the human immune system because the excess fat will trigger cell production, which causes inflammation of the body's organs, triggering the emergence of vascular diseases and other health problems. Now, this is the viewpoint of this a scholar, and I think she's not a Muslim scholar, but anyway, back to your question. So, as I mentioned, if you're a specialist and you know that because the conditions, the physical conditions of each person is different, it differs from one body, one person to another person. So, Islam leaves the conclusion and judgment to yourself. If you are sure about the fact that fasting is harmful to you, you should not fast. If you have doubts, then you need to refer to those people that you believe they are experts in this regard.
So it's not that easy to say, for example, it is harmful when you just surfing the net, finding that an article saying that it is.
Exactly, this is the
actually
point.
Opposing what you have heard, what you have read for us, actually, which looks to be scientific. So it is not that easy to find any article and refer to that and to say that it is harmful for the body.
Yeah, at the end of the day,
need to reach to a certainty that it is harmful.
Yeah, and finally, the certainty of each person matters. Of course, he or she should try to find the best, answer to this question. As I mentioned, if they are expert, then they can find out the answer. Otherwise, they need to refer to the best experts in that regard that they can rely on.
Thank you very much, dear Sheikh, for your answers, and your respected listeners for staying tuned and listening to us in Q&A on Islamic Beliefs from IRIB English Radio.
إن في الجنة نهرا لبن إن في الجنة نهرا لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا وبهذا الحب لا نخشى المحن.
This is IRIB English Radio.
website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
U.S. President Joe Biden might not be building a physical border wall, but he is continuing to expand an infrastructure designed to deter migrants from crossing into the United States. Though he has distanced himself from former President Donald Trump's immigration policy, the Biden administration's plan would see the U.S. government lean into its reliance on technology at the southern border with Mexico, where Customs and Border Protection, CBP, is currently expanding one of the most ambitious surveillance systems ever created. Stay with us for part two of a three-part article written by Will Lennon, under the heading, U.S. Customs and Border Protection Plans Vast Expansion of Technology-Based Surveillance. The article has been taken from truthout.org website. The U.S. federal government is prepared to spend plenty of money on companies willing to work at the southern border with Mexico. Over the past 40 years, the border security budget has grown steadily, from $350 million in 1980 to over $23 billion by 2018. Competition for the funding is fierce. In 2020, 1,452 lobbyists worked on homeland security issues in Washington. 1,390 lobbyists worked on immigration. Enduro Industries has shelled out over $1 million to a lobbying firm called Invariant since 2017. They successfully lobbied Congress to expand the deployment of Enduro Industries' surveillance tower program, and in July 2020, the surveillance towers were declared a program of record. CBP, Customs and Border Protection, already has 60 towers at this point. They aim to have 200 by 2022. In the summer of 2020, Enduro Industries started a contract with Department of Homeland Security worth more than $60 million. The product service code for the contract reads, Construction of Electronic and Communications Facilities. The agreement is an indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity, or IDIQ contract, meaning Department of Homeland Security placed a preliminary baseline order and will have the opportunity to re-up annually until summer of 2025. The IDIQ contract could ultimately be worth up to nearly $250 million and yield 170 surveillance towers for Customs and Border Protection. The two smaller contracts that fall under the IDIQ are for prefabricated tower structures. The first surveillance tower contract has a start date in July of 2020. It shows 37 land surveillance towers and 3 maritime surveillance towers due to be delivered within a year. The second surveillance tower contract is dated September 2020 and consists of 76 surveillance towers, along with replacement parts to be delivered within the year. A statement of work says Anduril Industries relies on Amazon Web Service, AWS, to centrally manage application and user access. Anduril Industries is identified in these documents as a small business. Palmer Luckey, one of Anduril Industries' co-founders, is an expert in sensor fusion from his days working in virtual reality. He previously founded the virtual reality gaming company Oculus, where he used sensor fusion to track players' movements, combining data from magnetometers, accelerometers, and gyroscopes. According to Palmer Luckey, Anduril Industries' surveillance towers use sensor fusion and artificial intelligence to create a three-dimensional model of large battle spaces. The surveillance towers combine data from radar, visual imaging, and thermal measurements. According to Customs and Border Protection, the towers can also communicate with each other, performing handoffs when something passes from the coverage area of one tower to that of another. Plus, they can spot activity in Mexico when groups might be staging a border incursion. Anduril Industries' ghost drones even gather data from the company's artificial intelligence system, which is called Lattice. At short distances, the ghosts are almost completely silent. A Customs and Border Protection endorsement on Anduril Industries' website describes Lattice as eyes in the back of my head. One border agent explained, once it integrates with a few pieces of technology, it will be completely different than what we've done in the past. Several Customs and Border Protection documents say Anduril Industries is obligated to provide a software development kit and an application programming interface API at the government's request. According to a procurement document, Customs and Border Protection wants technical data for the Lattice system so that the agency will be able to install and incorporate new sensor feeds into the Lattice tower, utilizing existing services and or infrastructure. A Customs and Border Protection statement of work specifies that any human image labeling has to be done in the United States and that faces must be blurred before labeling. The same document allows for a vendor to store non-blurred images for training purposes. Vendors are also authorized to use images to train artificial intelligence. According to Jack Paulson, a former Google research scientist who now runs the Technology Inquiry Watchdog Group, Customs and Border Protection could potentially use the Application Programming Interface, API, to go around Anduril Industries' software and gather data and images themselves. Jack Paulson said in an interview with Shadowproof, the blurring process could easily be circumvented if one of the application programming interface functions involved sampling from the raw surveillance feed. Customs and Border Protection is authorized to provide data to Department of Homeland Security's agency-wide biometric data management system, also known as HART. HART stands for Homeland Advanced Recognition Technology. Data stored in HART includes fingerprints and facial images, which can be used by the Agency for Facial Recognition. Advanced surveillance systems have been attempted at the border before Anduril Industries, most notably the Boeing-developed Secure Border Initiative. SBINet project combines sensors and surveillance towers with the aim of reducing illegal immigration. The U.S. government spent $1 billion on the system, which was riddled with bugs, before it was quietly scrapped back in 2011. Although the Boeing-developed Secure Border Initiative, SBI Net, failed, experts on migration say that it did have an impact, and it's likely SBI Net contributed to a spike in deaths among migrants trying to cross the border by pushing crossers into more deadly terrain. Driving migrants into rugged territory is a strategy the U.S. government has employed for decades. U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Services, INS, a forerunner of Department of Homeland Security, launched the Prevention Through Deterrence strategy back in 1994. One aspect of the strategy was to push migrants from crossing at safe urban nodes of the border, like El Paso and San Diego, towards rougher terrain. Doris Meissner, then the INS commissioner, believed that under prevention through deterrence, geography would be an ally and that migrants would soon quit trying to make the crossing once they saw how deadly it had become. It became common for the crossing to take days. Migrants often ran out of water and food partway through the trip and were sometimes relieved to be detained by the time Border Patrol caught up with them. A study published in the Journal of Borderland Studies used methods from archaeology and military science to measure how energy is expended by people crossing the border between the United States and Mexico. The study then compared those results to records showing the locations of migrant deaths. Researchers found relationships between the enforcement, specifically in the form of SBI Net, routes taken by border crossers and fatalities. Avoiding areas where they would likely be intercepted or surveyed often sent migrants into regions where they were more likely to encounter dehydration, hypothermia, injury, and exhaustion. In a 2013 interview, one Border Patrol agent described migrants avoiding the SBI Net system. The agent said, "They'd stayed down in the mountains where it blocked the camera." That was the second part of Will Lennon's article. U.S. Customs and Border Protection plans vast expansion of technology-based surveillance. Tune in tomorrow for the third and concluding part of this series. Until then, goodbye and God bless.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.